the heart of the issue is trade. And that's where I think really Alaska stands tall as being an export powerhouse.
The Walker administration is focused on strong economic ties with China. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Monday, March 5th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, so far, a smooth trail for Iditarod racers.
A little bit soft in the beginning, I think for everybody, but after the event night, it was really fine all the way here. So.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The University of Alaska Anchorage is investing in Alaska by equipping students with the knowledge and tools for academic success. These students will go on to be the doctors, nurses, teachers, engineers, and artists of Alaska who shape the future of the state by bringing new solutions, inventions, and ideas to the table. Amazing stories are being written every day at UAA. More information at uaa.alaska.edu/admissions. This message sponsored by UAA.
Governor Bill Walker is working to deepen the state's ties with China. Alaska exported more than $1.3 billion worth of goods to China in 2017. China is the top consumer of Alaska goods. During a press conference in Anchorage today, Walker said he wants to increase that trade. To that end, Walker also announced a new trade mission. He says there are still some details to hammer out, like who's going.
We anticipate this being predominantly private sector folks that will be paying their own way to participate.
The governor's office is taking applications until early April from Alaska companies that want to travel with the state's delegation. Walker also talked about the state's desire to partner with China on the Alaska Liquefied Natural Gas Pipeline project. He said he doesn't expect looming steel and aluminum import tariffs will derail the pipeline, though the 800-mile pipeline project is expected to use thousands of tons of steel. Alaska Gasline Development Corporation head Keith Meyer said he does not expect the looming tariffs to add much cost to the $45 billion project.
The heart of the issue is trade, and that's where I think really Alaska stands tall as being an export powerhouse for the United States. And if we get this Alaska trade rolling, then I don't think there's need for that kind of tough trade talk.
State officials also highlighted a new scholarship program for Alaska students to study abroad in China during the conference. And they spoke of increasing tourism and the Ted Stevens Anchorage International Airport seeking to add more flights to China. Governor Bill Walker also said today he's heard from legislative staff that committee hearings are moving appropriately on budget discussions. He says he's pleased with that and optimistic that the budget will be done within 90 days or at least within the constitutional framework to avoid the risk of a government shutdown. But the governor says he's disappointed that the House and Senate are still struggling to find consensus.
I think it's going to take compromise, and I think that everyone knows that the worst plan is no plan, and that's what we have right now. We have no fiscal plan at this point, and you know, waiting and hoping is not a plan, and that's what we see happening with some in the Senate, is that hope that the price of oil goes back up, and hope this and that. We just have to, you know, we have to figure out what size government we want and how are we going to pay for it. It's pretty basic.
What's your level of concern about another year if there's not a compromise and how that may affect investment in the state's economy?
Well, it'll continue the cloud of uncertainty we have. And, you know, with companies wondering, do we invest here or do we not? How are they going to fix their deficit? And so that creates a fog of uncertainty that we don't need. And that's the other piece of this. That's why, you know, several years ago, we introduced 9 different pieces, just a little bit here, a little bit there, not any one particular sector of our economy or our population. And they just have not engaged on that.
Senator Bill Willikowski, Anchorage Democrat, has proposed a constitutional amendment that would make the permanent fund dividend guaranteed by the Constitution. What do you think about that? Do you support this? Do you like this idea?
Well, what we're doing is we're doing all we are to be able to protect the permanent fund, protect the fund itself, though it does not get drawn down, so it's there for generations and whatnot. So, you know, I'd have to look and see what it would look like. Is it a formula? Is it a specific dollar amount? How is it structured? You know, I'm willing to go to areas that I'm not comfortable with to bring this to a close. And so I tend to not draw firm lines and I absolutely won't do this, won't do that. And that's part of the problem we see in Juneau. There's a lot of folks that have told us all the things they won't do, but what will they do, I guess, is my question to them.
Governor, you've suggested a payroll tax. There's been calls for an income tax by others. The Anchorage Assembly approved a municipal gas tax. Do you think lawmakers who have resisted new taxes in the past may be coming around or considering them now, as some have sort of come around to agreeing to use the permanent fund when at one time many lawmakers said, no way, that's not happening? That's changed now. What do you think about taxes?
Well, I think they're seeing that our deferred maintenance, well, we had, you know, the stimulus package we put in, the Alaska Economic Stimulus Act, we put that into the Recovery Act to be able to do some deferred maintenance, which would be done in over 60 different communities across the state, put people to work. We have the highest unemployment in the nation. The deferred maintenance is a debt unpaid. It's going to continue to grow. So we thought it would made a lot of sense to tie the revenues to specifically not growing government, just fixing the infrastructure that we have. So we thought that made a lot of sense. We still think it makes sense. I've heard some discussion about other ways of funding that, and I'm certainly open to that. But let's get on with putting Alaskans to work, bring the economy out of the recession that we're in, and fix the we're going to have to do that at some point.
There's been several announcements over the last few months about new potential on the North Slope, NPRA. Now ANWR is for the first time a possibility. But these potentials are at least probably a decade away. Mm-hmm. Do you worry that there's too much focus on more oil in taps in the future and not enough present focus on the budget right now?
Well, I am concerned about that. Yes, we have seen in the last leases we had were probably the most we've seen in two decades as far as the amount of interest on the North Slope. So that's good. But you're right. It's many years out before that oil gets into a tap. Now there is some oil up there that can get in sooner, and we're trying to accelerate that if possible. Oil that's already been discovered that just needs processing to be able to get into taps. But that's a bit of a long game. It's the short game, the immediate game that we're trying to play out before we run completely out of savings.
Governor Bill Walker discussing the budget today in Anchorage. Alaskans who provided public testimony on the budget largely asked lawmakers to maintain or expand state funding. 101 people testified from across the state last Thursday, Friday, and Saturday to the House Finance Committee. Many testified from legislative information offices. 90 people focused on funding services. Most of the other 11 asked for spending cuts. Democratic former State Representative Charles Dingan from Unalakleet was visiting Juneau. He says the state should have an income tax to fund services.
One of the things that I know about our people that live in villages, we help people. We help all those that need help, and everybody takes turns needing help.
The proposed $5.3 billion budget is $330 million more than the current budget. Most of the increase is from pension payments, Medicaid, and permanent fund dividends. Some of the areas that received the most support in public comments were funds for addiction and mental health treatment, the University of Alaska, and the Public Defender Agency. Former U.S. Attorney Robert Bundy says the state should increase funding for public defenders. He says underfunding has caused delays that affect crime victims. He says that's because public defenders don't have the time to convince their clients to reach plea agreements.
The defendant does not trust his or her lawyer. They're not going to agree to a deal. They're going to drag it out forever. And all of this delay is going to inure to the detriment of every victim and every citizen in the state.
The House Finance Committee is scheduled to discuss the budget today. It could send the budget to the full House later this week. However, the Alaska House likely won't consider bills that would require a close vote this week. That's because the House Majority Coalition will be two members short. Anchorage Democratic Representative Ivy Sponholz experienced a pulmonary embolism last week. The condition can result when a blood clot or other material gets wedged in an artery in a lung. She returned from Juneau to Anchorage to receive treatment, and she wrote on Twitter today that she is home recuperating with her family. She said she plans to return to Juneau next Monday. And this Friday, Bethel Democratic Representative Tiffany Zolkowski is scheduled to be sworn in. The seat has been vacant since February 12th, when former Representative Zach Fansler's resignation became effective. Without the two members, the House Majority Caucus has only 20 voting members in the 40-seat body. Senator Lisa Murkowski has added her name to a school safety bill, one of the first to emerge in the Senate after the Valentine's Day shooting at a Florida high school. The Stop School Violence Bill is co-sponsored by Republicans and Democrats and does not impose gun control. It would allow the Justice Department to give grants to schools to make them more secure and for training to identify threats. It's one of the changes Murkowski told the Alaska legislature last month that Congress needs to make to help prevent school shootings.
We know that there's no simple, one easy answer for these acts of violence.
The Stop School Violence Bill authorizes $75 million this year and $100 million a year after that. Not all of that will be new spending. Some will be offset by cuts to an existing program, the Comprehensive School Safety Initiative. That Justice Department program was created in response to the 2012 school shooting in Newtown, Connecticut. It has provided as much as $75 million each year for school safety research and pilot programs. The Trump administration called for its demise last month, 2 days before the school shooting in Florida. Murkowski does not support proposals to ban assault-style rifles or to raise the age for buying guns to 21. Neither does Senator Dan Sullivan or Congressman Don Young. Both Sullivan and Young have identified violent video games as a possible factor in the incidents of school shootings. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, concerns over dwindling gnome moose populations.
You know, we see our willows completely encased in ice. Those are things I think that we need to begin to understand.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The South Central Alaska Subsistence Regional Advisory Council will discuss possible federal subsistence fish and shellfish proposals and other subsistence-related issues and invites public participation at a meeting March 6th and 7th starting at 8:30 a.m. at the Aleutian Pribilof Islands Association in Anchorage. More at 800-478-1456. This message sponsored by the Office of Subsistence Management.
The 46th annual Iditarod Trail Sled Dog Race has seen its first full day of mushing. The race leaders left the Rainy Pass checkpoint early this afternoon. Rookie Jesse Holmes was the first musher out of the checkpoint, followed by Richie Deal and Wade Mars. The last great race kicked off Saturday with a ceremonial start in downtown Anchorage. KNOM's Davis Hovey was there.
3, 2, 1. And the Iditarider is Michael Hayes from the great state of Oregon, along with Richie Deal on his way to Nome.
You just heard Richie Deal of ENIAC embark on the ceremonial 11-mile stretch through downtown Anchorage. Earlier in the morning, representatives from PETA, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, set up a display next to the starting line. The group says the Iditarod inflicts unnecessary harm on dogs and set up tombstones above five deceased-looking stuffed huskies.
These five dogs, Schilling, Groovy, Flash, Deacon, and Smoke, all lost their lives within the span of 1 week at last year's Iditarod.
Trisha Lebketcher is a campaigner with PETA. The group has long opposed the Iditarod and for the first time ever sent a delegation to protest at the start. The small demonstration remained civil as tourists and passerby took photos and disbanded later in the morning. The group has said it plans to have a presence at the finish line in Nome as well. PETA's presence is only one aspect of the controversy surrounding this year's 1,000-mile sled dog race. Andy Pohl, a rookie out of Kinnick who married fellow musher Christy Barrington, says he has not been focused on any of the hoopla.
There's controversy? I haven't heard. I've been too busy training. It's been a lot of enjoyment working with these dogs and learning just about the sport of mushing over the last 3 years. I've always been an athlete doing stuff, but incorporating the dogs and the journey is what it's all about.
Even with the notable absence of past champions Dallas Seavey and John Baker, this year's Iditarod field is considered extremely competitive, with many of last year's top finishers gunning to be first under Nome's Burled Arch. Among them is Nicholas Petit of Girdwood, who says he's different from rivals like Mitch Seavey and that his race strategy is not mapped out ahead of time.
Mitch has a plan, he won't tell you. I don't have a plan, I'll tell you that. That's the difference.
This year's Iditarod is dedicated to the late Joe Reddington Jr., the 2018 honorary musher who passed away in August of 2017. Reddington's dad, Joe Reddington Sr., is considered father of the Iditarod and has three grandsons racing in this year's Iditarod. One of them is Robert Reddington of Willow.
It's going to be fun. You know, Joey's spirit, you know, is so strong. You know, I feel like he's still, you know, with us today. Joey is very doggy. It's awesome. He's honorary musher. He'd be proud and he'd be happy all the Reddingtons are still at the race start.
Each year, the honorary musher carries bib number one among the field of racers. Bib number two this year was drawn by Cody Straith of Fairbanks, who left Willow at 2 p.m. Sunday to kick off the 2018 Iditarod. With help from Alaska Public Media's Zach Hughes, I'm Davis Hovey, reporting in Anchorage.
The spectacle of the Iditarod ceremonial start in Anchorage sends sled dog teams through the city's trails past hundreds of race revelers. They're called trail gators, and the fun ranges from dance parties and costumes to kids playing in the snow and high-fiving mushers. Alaska Public Media's Casey Grove has this audio postcard.
This is Trailgate. We come here and we celebrate all of the mushing for the Iditarod, and we just have fun, and we always pick a theme this year, so this year is out of this world, can you tell? I'm a Trekkie, Uhura. Yes, here goes my black satchel. You've got a little bit of Star Wars, a little bit everyone making things up. So yeah, we do it every year. You should always come over and say hi.
Well, early on, I had some hat tricks where I gave three out per team. Yeah, the handler, the musher, and the rider. Recently, it's been a little light.
It's a mixed bag. I had a fellow who already had something in one hand and then took the PBR with his other hand. I'm not quite sure how he was holding onto the sled at that point, but he was going for it.
Number 32, starting his 21st Iditarod, Jim Lanier out of Chugiak, Alaska.
Brats, you know, couches, dogs. It's kind of what we do down here this time of year. You know how it is.
That's the breakfast of champions right there.
Yeah, I think everybody here is getting more and more kids, so the everything is, you know, staying on the down low.
Well, I am passing out hot dogs. Yeah, we've had a lot of takers, definitely. Martin Boozer took a hot dog, and I'm definitely rooting for Martin Boozer, Didi Johnro, and yeah. Well, fun, because you get to meet all sorts of different mushers, see the dogs. They were so cute.
Good luck.
That audio postcard from the Trailgate parties in Anchorage was sent in by Casey Grove. From Anchorage, the mushers restarted in Willow on Sunday. Then every 2 minutes, they took off, headed east to the first two checkpoints, Yentna and Squintna. It was a festive atmosphere overnight as Iditarod mushers pulled into the Squintna checkpoint 83 miles into the trail. A bonfire blazed while a musician belted out songs from a small heated tent. A few dozen fans and onlookers were gathered when the first musher's blue headlamp emerged out of the darkness and headed toward the race checkers under a welcome banner.
Bib number?
17.
And name?
Ray Reddington.
Welcome, Ray. You staying or going?
Over here.
Staying. Okay, you know the drill.
After signing in, Ray Reddington Jr. and all 16 of his dogs pulled in for a rest at about 9:30 p.m. last night. Just 1 minute behind him was Mats Pettersson, who led the full pack of mushers for a stretch of the evening before being overtaken not long before arriving. Pettersson says so far, trail conditions are good.
A little bit soft in the beginning, I think, for everybody, but after Jämtna, it was really fine all the way here. So
Pettersson, too, came in with a full string of dogs. The third musher into the checkpoint was Mitch Seavey. He made the run in about the same amount of time, but did so with just 12 dogs on the line when he pulled in. Still, Seavey says he was working to keep them at a slower, more controlled pace.
But, you know, I got four dogs in the sled. That kind of helps slow things down.
Seavey and his son Dallas have dominated the Iditarod in recent years while refining a strategy that involves rotating dogs in and out of their sleds for rest along the way. The next few checkpoints after Skwentna pass through the Alaska Range, one of the most technically difficult sections of the trail. The first musher to scratch in the 2018 Iditarod is Zoya Denuer of Delta Junction. According to a statement from the Iditarod, Denuer decided to scratch for personal health reasons. She arrived at the Skwentna checkpoint just after 3 a.m. this morning with 15 dogs on the line. Despite covering roughly 80 miles of Iditarod Trail along the 1,000-mile southern route, Denuer made the decision to scratch at 7:49 a.m. in Skwentna. Denuer has finished two Iditarod sled dog races out of the eight she has started.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Join Alaska Public Media TV every week for Think Wednesday, featuring a dynamic lineup of programs exploring the thrilling world of nature, technology, and science. Think Wednesday explores the mysteries of our world and our universe, bringing the most exciting and inspiring stories that provide the answers that curious minds crave. Think Wednesday, every Wednesday beginning at 7 p.m. only on Alaska Public Media TV. One of the greatest honors for a public media station is delivering on its promise to provide quality programming and news you can trust to the communities it serves. What you hear on air is the result of a dedicated team working together to bring you the best. It's a privilege to be a part of your day. Thank you for listening, for your feedback, and for your support.
Response crews continue to work on the scene of an oil spill north of the city of Kodiak. 1 week ago today, according to a situation report from the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation, high winds caused a spill of up to 3,000 gallons of fuel at a facility on Port William on the southern end of Shuyak Island. The Coast Guard contracted with Alaska Shadow on the response. According to a Coast Guard release yesterday, responders gathered 6 bags of oil and are using containment booms on the remaining waste. No affected wildlife has been reported, and response crews are now looking into cleaning up debris. Moose weren't always a staple in western Alaska. The animals migrated to the region sometime after the turn of the century. But in an area just north of Nome, the population has been decreasing following years of heavy snow. From Alaska's Energy Desk, Elizabeth Jenkins has the story of a mystery that's still unfolding.
Warren Hansen is counting down the days until he can fly over the tundra to look for moose. Although he'll be searching the landscape with his eyes, his ears will be doing most of the work.
I've listened to static and beeps all day and trying not to get motion sick.
Hansen is a wildlife biologist with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. This beeping is just a demo, but in the aircraft that sound will be transmitted from Hansen's moose to a radio receiver. Or rather, the 16 calves he collared last fall. Right now those calves are somewhere outside of Nome wearing the chunky white collars Hansen gave them. Hopefully they're emitting a sound like this. But this sound could be closer to the truth. That's what Hansen calls the mortality signal. In an area north of Nome, the moose population is decreasing by about 12% annually. Hansen says moose are an important subsistence food, so a shrinking population is a concern. About a year ago, the Department of Fish and Game received federal and state money to look into the issue. But if this were a detective story, Hansen says it's only the first chapter in figuring out what's going on with moose.
early on, you know, we just got the tip that somebody's not doing too hot.
Moose turned up in Nome around the 1930s, and scientists aren't totally sure why. It's possible they could have just naturally migrated into the area. To the delight of local hunters, they just came barreling through.
Well, it may not have been barreling through, but it was probably a pretty impressive sight to see this long-legged dark animal standing on a hillside.
Tony Gorn has lived in Nome for 20 years, and he spent most of that time working as a management biologist for the Department of Fish and Game. Back in the 1980s, the moose population was booming. So much that biologists wondered if the landscape could even sustain it. And by the late 2000s, Gorn was on the job, capturing calves to weigh them and see how the animals were getting on. The first few years
kind of told us that, yeah, no, things are okay.
The moose were a normal weight. But the next 2 years, heavy snow fell in Nome, and their weight dropped. Management biologists wondered if there were too many moose, so they increased the hunting quota. But since then, the population started to decline more rapidly. Gorn says it's too early to tell exactly what's going on. It's complicated, but nutrition could be a factor.
There's definitely not one single thing that we could call the silver bullet.
Still, one thing's for certain. Winters in Nome are not as cold as they used to be. At around 30 degrees, you get warm, wet conditions, which can lead to more snow and ice. As for moose, Gorn says the animals are hardy. They're built to handle heavy snow. But their environment, at least around Nome, appears to be changing. Moose eat shrubby plants like willow.
You know, we see our willows completely encased in ice. Those are things I think that we need to begin to understand, particularly if they're going to become long-term events.
But for now, he says the emphasis is on what's happening to moose, not necessarily the why. Are they malnourished, migrating farther north? Are the calves being eaten? Those are the big questions. When the study is done in about 3 years, the Department of Fish and Game hopes to have a better understanding about what's going on. The research could influence management decisions down the line to help stabilize the population. In the meantime, Gorn and his colleague plan to go back out into the tundra this spring to check on the young moose.
If the weather was beautiful tomorrow, we're not flying.
He says right now the plane is a solid block of ice. The mystery is when the weather will be clear enough to fly. From Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Elizabeth Jenkins in Nome.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. Tonight's stories can be found at our website, alaskapublic.org/news. You can find us on Facebook at Alaska Public Media and follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Rasha McChesney, Elizabeth Jenkins, and Andrew Kitchenman in Juneau, Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., Davis Hovey and Casey Grove in Anchorage, Zachariah Hughes in Squintna, and Kayla DeRoche in Kodiak. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Wesley Early is our web editor, and I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Northern Air Cargo, providing year-round transportation of all types of freight, from vehicles and oversized equipment to small packages for corporations or small business. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956. Did you know while exposed to secondhand smoke, every breath you take can damage your heart? Cells lining blood vessels become swollen and inflamed. Plaque builds narrowing blood vessels, and clots can form, robbing the heart of oxygen. Exposure to secondhand smoke increases your heart disease risk by up to 30%. It's your heart protected. This message sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Quitline, 1-800-QUIT-NOW.
Opioids are common prescription pain relievers and must be used properly to avoid danger. Common opioids include hydrocodone, oxycodone, morphine, fentanyl, and codeine. Safely getting rid of unused opioid medication prevents children and pets from accidental poisoning and protects the environment. Information about safe opioid storage and proper disposal is at opioids.alaska.gov. This message is sponsored by the State of Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
This is statewide news on Alaska Public Media.